Excuse the road noise. In just a moment, Rick Santorum in the car, driving from one rally to another in Wisconsin. Uncommon Knowledge, now. Welcome to Uncommon Knowledge. I'm Peter Robinson. This is a special audio edition of Uncommon Knowledge, audio-only edition of Uncommon Knowledge, with former senator and for the past 10 months presidential candidate Rick Santorum, who spoke to us from Wisconsin. Rick Santorum explains why he is in this race to the end. Senator Peter, hey, how are you, Senator? Listen, first of all, set the scene for us. I gather you're in a car, but your schedule – you're in Wisconsin?
I am.
From what – between which town and which town? Where are you headed next?
I'm just leaving, Chippewa Falls.
Right.
And on my way to – where are we going next?
Abbotsford.
Got it. Listen, Senator, the first question is almost mandatory. Mitt Romney is in this to win. Ron Paul, by contrast, is in this to take a message all the way to the convention. At this stage, do you see yourself as remaining in the race to win it or to make a point?
I've been in this race from the very beginning for one reason, because I believe we pose the best possible chance of defeating Barack Obama and getting this country turned in the direction that is consistent with the founding principles of our country. And that's how I'm running. And when that is not a possibility anymore, if that happens, which I hope and believe it will not, but if it does, then that's when we'll do what you need to do and make sure that we get behind whoever the nominee is and support them.
Right. This past week in the Supreme Court, Obamacare. Mr. Justice Anthony Kennedy, during the oral arguments, said that when the federal government tells citizens they must purchase insurance or face penalties, then, quote, I'm quoting Justice Kennedy, that changes the relationship of the federal government to the individual in a very fundamental way, close quote. Have you sensed out on the campaign trail that events in the high court this week have had an effect on politics, on the questions people are asking, how they're weighing you versus Governor Romney? Has there been an effect?
Well, I certainly brought up that quote repeatedly in my speeches. And the reason I have is because I've been saying that for the past year plus, and that Obamacare changes the entire equation in America, and that this race is not about anything other than who we are as Americans and what the role is between government and the people, and whether we're going to be as we were in this country, we the people that are the folks who are in charge, or whether we are going to be subjects of a group of people who are going to control our rights and responsibilities. And that's the fundamental question, and I think Justice Kennedy nailed it.
Right. Do you feel – I guess what I'm getting at a little bit is, do you feel a sense of validation? I have to say, listening to that tape as it was played after that day's oral argument, when I heard Justice Kennedy say that, I thought, wow, what a relief. We're not the crazy ones.
No,
you felt it as well?
I'm thinking Justice Kennedy saw a couple of my speeches. and, you know, look, you're out here and you laugh at that, but, you know, justices don't live in vacuums.
Right.
They live in society, and they hear the news, and they see things, and they hear things, and things resonate with them too. And, I'm certainly not taking credit for that by any stretch of the imagination, but we certainly have put that out there in the public discourse as strongly as anybody. And it has been echoed by a lot of folks out there, and hopefully that's had an impact on the perception of these justices and as well as the country.
Right. Listen, it's said, of course, that during campaigns, the American people learn about the candidates, but of course, candidates are also learning. A couple of questions about Americans. There's a poll by the British company GlobeScan that asked this question of people in different countries. Here's the question. Do you agree that a free market economy is the best system? In China and in Brazil, 67% said yes. In the United States, only 59% said yes. And that's down in the United States from 80% in 2002. What's going on?
People are affected by the culture, by our education system, and by our political leaders. And we have a president of the United States who doesn't believe that the free market system in this country is, in fact, the best system for our country. He gave a speech in Kansas that pretty much said the same. And we are seeing an all-out assault on free markets and free enterprise and a free economy. And it has consequences. And of course, you have the elites in society and the media, as well as in the educational world, that have been advocating for a more state-controlled economy for decades. In fact, radically so, many, many years ago. And so this is nothing new. It's just now has gained favor with tough economic times. You see this and a ascension of a president who sees America's economic past as a failure because it led to, in his mind, great income inequality and abuse of certain people in society and people being overly enriched in others. And that, as a result, we need to redistribute and we need to reorder the economy in this country with the government in charge.
Yeah. Another conundrum about the American electorate. Polling data shows that in recent years, Americans, especially young Americans, have become more pro-life. They're moving towards you, Senator, on that one. At the same time, Americans, and again, especially young Americans, have become more welcoming or at least less opposed to gay marriage. How do you explain that one?
Young Americans are, first off, a very visual generation, and you now see in very graphic detail life in the womb. They've seen their own pictures of their own sonograms when they were at that age. You know, all of these children who are in college right now or in high school, you know, have sonogram pictures when they were the reality. That was them. Convince yourself not to believe something that you know is true, that it isn't true. But it's harder in this very, as I said, very visually oriented generation. So I think that's a big part of it. And secondly, on the other issue, it's a cultural acceptance. You've seen both our education system and our popular culture reinforcing and changing social norms as they have been for, more than a decade now. And that has an effect on attitudes of young people as a result. You don't see that same type of thing within the popular culture or with respect to abortion. Abortion is one that even the popular culture is uncomfortable with advocating for. They don't criticize it. They respect the pro-choice position, but it's hard for the popular culture to go out and advocate for having abortions. It's not as easy a thing to advocate for.
It's not cool. One way or the other, abortion isn't cool. Yeah.
Abortion is not cool.
Economics. In February, Governor Romney called for a 20% across-the-board income tax cut. Now he's endorsed Congressman Paul Ryan's budget, which would reduce the current 6 tax brackets to 2, one of 10%, the other 25%, cut the corporate tax rate from 35% to 25%. We've got Romney saying that stuff. That's a kind of tight, comprehensible bundle. What's the Santorum economic program?
Well, it's funny. The Romney program has changed 3 times in the last 6 months. That gives you an idea of etch-a-sketch public policy. There's a real example of it. Our policy, by the way, is a 10 and 28% tax bracket. I don't know where Paul Ryan got his plan from, but we've had our plan out there for a while, and it's a 2 bracket tax plan, and it's a simplified plan that goes down to 5 deductions, eliminates everything else. Children, charities, health care, housing, and pensions.
Hold on. Let me just repeat that. 5 takes all the deductions down to only 5 deductions and eliminates the 6 brackets to only 2, one of 10% and one of 28%. So that's close to a flat – you and Paul Ryan are as close to a flat tax as any major figures in this country have been since Kemp Roth, I guess.
Well, and, you know, I believe that that's the best approach to keep things simple and to have strong economic growth and still have a progressive tax system at different rates. And then on the corporate tax side, we have a flat tax. We don't cut it to 25, we cut it to 17.5 and make it a flat tax. No exemptions, deductions. It's simply a tax on net profits. We expense everything. It's a very simple tax for everybody to be able to pay. And for manufacturers and processors, we eliminate all corporate taxes on manufacturing and processing activity. So we have a very bold, dynamic and code that's going to revitalize the manufacturing and processing sectors in our economy, which will be a huge, huge plus for small-town rural America as well as for blue-collar America. And getting things made here in America is going to obviously revitalize the economy from the bottom up.
Right. Politics. You're in the car on the way to another rally. Everybody who reads Real Clear Politics knows that you're winning over and over again among voters who consider themselves very conservative, who have more modest incomes, who have high school educations, perhaps not college. How can you expand your appeal, or do you think you need to between now and the convention, to get to attract those affluent suburban Republican voters who've been supporting Governor Romney?
Well, I mean, we're winning among those voter groups, but you know, a lot of these other voter groups are not doing that badly either. And you know, we're our message is clearly geared toward creating more opportunities for folks who have been left behind. I think that's a winning message. It's a Reagan message. It's how Reagan was able to galvanize and win. I mean, let's just ask you this question. If in the general election, the idea is that we're going to have to win moderate and moderates and some Democrats to be able to win the election in these swing states.
Right.
Well, what group of folks are we more likely to win? Higher income liberals and moderates or modest income moderates and Democrats? And well, the Reagan coalition was lower income because at least the lower income folks on the values levels tend to agree with you. Higher income folks, if they're higher income Democrats, they probably don't agree on economics. They would struggle mightily with agreeing with Republicans on everything else. So I think we have a much stronger appeal if we have a message of hope and opportunity, particularly focused on manufacturers and energy, to get the Reagan coalition back together than winning high-income Democrats and independents.
Senator, I promised your staff I'd give you a moment to rest up and I guess run a comb through your hair or whatever it is that you need to do between now and your next stop. But let me ask just a couple more questions here. If you had to state it in just one or two sentences, people who've listened this long to this podcast will still be with you and want to know the answer to this question. To give listeners something to hang on to as briefly as possible, what's the difference between Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney?
Authenticity, trust, core values, consistency, conviction, someone who actually is in this because they want to see they understand the serious problems that confront this country right now, not because I just want to be president of the United States. I think that's just a fundamental difference. I mean, I've throughout the course of my career, I've been a cause guy. I look at the causes that are at the core of the problems in America, and I've been unabashed in going out and fighting to rectify the situations as best I can, either through government, if that's the appropriate place, or outside of government. And it hasn't changed here. Our country is in a serious, serious situation right now, and that's the only reason I'm running, and because I think we provide the best chance to change that.
Yeah. Senator, last question. Let's stipulate that you're able to gather enough delegates to prevent Mitt Romney from wrapping up the nomination before the convention in Tampa. What's the Santorum plan? There hasn't been much writing about, there hasn't been much reporting on this. What's the Santorum plan for going to Tampa? How do you persuade delegates at that convention to wrest the nomination away from the guy who comes in with the most delegates and give it instead to the guy who comes in with the second most delegates? Have you gamed that out? What's the appeal?
I would just say if a man who outspent his opponents by a factor of almost 10 or close to it, who has all of the establishment behind him, who has all of the media prevailing on the American people or Republicans, I should say, of the inevitability of this guy's candidacy, and he still can't win a majority of delegates, you really think he has a good chance of beating Barack Obama? And the resources that he's going to have for him and the attacks that are going to be leveled against him as a nominee, that would be one point. And the second point is most of the delegates who come to the Republican National Convention are reflective of who the Republican Party is, and that is we are a conservative party. And Governor Romney is simply not a a conviction conservative. And even the folks that support Governor Romney, I would suspect, you know, in their private moments, say that. We excite the base of this party. We will get folks motivated to fight fights for us in the fall election. And I think that's what will end up being our key to success at the convention.
I said that was the last question. I told a lie. How are things going in Pennsylvania? I know you've got three primaries coming up on Tuesday, Wisconsin, Maryland, the District of Columbia. The polls, to me, that have been flipping around the most dramatically are out in Pennsylvania, where some show you up 20 points, some show you up just a couple points. What's happening there in your home state?
The one poll that has us up 2 points, I mean, and just to give you an idea, in the last governor's race, they had our governor candidate, you know, up like four on the week before the election. He won by 30. It's just a terrible poll. It's run by a liberal Democrat, and who just never gets it right. If he does, I mean, it's a blind squirrel. Occasionally gets it right, but it's, you know, the clock is right twice a day. When I saw that poll, I just dismissed it. But of course, the media is going to use that to trump it up that somehow this is a big deal. You know, poll came out today that says we're 20. We saw another poll done by somebody internally up in Pennsylvania that ties us up 19. That's where we feel the race is.
And do you have a chance to win in Wisconsin on Tuesday, or is your notion on Tuesday you're going to win enough delegates? You're not aiming to win outright anywhere. And this really is the last one. Your staff will never forget.
I aim to win outright in every state I run in. It's not to mean we will, but most recent poll out today is 5 points. That's certainly, you know, pretty close to the margin of error. And we're going to continue to work it hard. I mean, we're only being outspent 4-1 here. That's as good as we've had in a long time. In Illinois it was more like 10-1, and Ohio it was 11-1. 4-1 is doable for us.
Senator, thanks for taking the time. You know, I have to say, you sound as though you're enjoying this.
Oh, I mean,
you like the campaign. Yeah, underdog.
What a great blessing to be out here and meeting all these folks who are so so convicted about how important this race is and how they want to get involved and make a difference in their country. And it's been we've been on the road every day but five over the past 10 months, and it's been every day I have no trouble getting up in the morning and taking on the challenge and fighting for freedom.
Senator, thank you for taking the time today. Enjoy your drive in Wisconsin, and good luck.
You got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Peter Robinson for Uncommon Knowledge. Thanks for joining us.